fight and your children. But somehow or other you're satisfied to sustain the wives and children of those who do the coining and regulating of money, who live in our palaces and travel in our yachts. You want that. You voted for that. You have that. And it's time that you take that.
Good evening. God bless you. The words of Father Charles Todlin, once the most influential of radio voices. The guest on Howard Miller's Chicago, coming in just a moment, here on Channel 7. Don't miss it. We're glad you joined us in Howard Miller's Chicago. And now, here's Howard.
Thank you for joining us, ladies and gentlemen. With your permission, I must necessarily, by way of introducing my guest, indulge in some personal reflections and personal comments as regards the background. Picture, if you will, please, some 30 years ago, 40 years ago, a young boy just becoming aware of the outside world around him, sitting at home on a Sunday afternoon with his dad and mother, of whom he was vastly proud, and listening as he participated in world events through the eyes and ears of radio. Then you will understand that on every Sunday afternoon in most American homes, a voice boomed out into the homes telling us of our problems and suggesting some cures. That voice belonged to a radio priest, a radio commentator, a priest from Royal Oak in Michigan. And it's a rather significant occasion that I have here on this broadcast, ladies and gentlemen, to introduce now the man who made such a profound impression on that young man at the high school level, because he was just becoming aware of the social problems of that day. I was the boy, and my guest, ladies and gentlemen, is Father Charles E. Coghlan. Father Coghlan, welcome to Chicago.
Thank you indeed, Mr. Miller.
I can't begin to tell you, and please call me Howard, Father, what tremendous impression you made on me as a young man. I don't know that I was necessarily of your political persuasion. I don't know that I was of any political persuasion at that tender year, but certainly you made me aware of the fact that all of us had to drop apathy and become American citizens and love our country, and that you did, I'm sure, for many hundreds of millions of Americans.
Well, it was a privilege that was given to me by circumstance more than by choice.
Father, actually, you went up there to this small parish, the Shrine of the Little Flower in Royal Oak, Michigan, and you were sorely in need of funds to operate the parish.
I had a small parish, indeed, a small acreage. Bishop Gallagher sent me out to establish a parish, 28 families in the parish. He loaned me $58,000 to build a church and purchase a property, and after the church built, no parishioners. Well, that was a problem indeed, because the banks never wait. Every month they want their payment on the mortgage. A good friend of mine, Dick Richards, formerly of WJR, and Leo Fitzpatrick, whom I buried 2 weeks ago, he was general manager of WJR and owned a station in Buffalo. They said, if someone should find a radio, your voice, we know you can preach a little bit, why not try the radio and tell the people of your predicament? And I took their advice, tried the radio, and some of my good friends gathered around me. For instance, Wish Regan, Walter Briggs, Detroit Baseball.
Yeah.
And it happened that this Sunday when I opened up the church for radio, the New York Giants were in. Not the New York Giants. God forgive me for ever saying that.
Probably the Yankees.
The Yankees,
right, yeah.
I meant to say, they're in town with Babe Ruth. And Babe Ruth is a personal friend of Harry Heilman.
Okay.
And Harry Heilman got all the New York Yankees and the Detroit Tigers to come out and play usher at the church. And I advertised it the Saturday before. And lo and behold, all these bandits stood at all the corners around there, and everybody who tried to pass by, they had to meet the hat. Money went into it, no change. Pass on, they'd say. And they gathered together, those Yankees and Tigers, over $12,000 that one Sunday. Start your church, Father.
Isn't that an amazing story? Well, now, you first addressed yourself really to youth, didn't you? To the little boys and girls.
Yes,
in
that was the beginning of it.
And then,
catechism class.
Yes, and then you saw money begin to come in, And then at what stage, Father, now this was in 1926, at what stage then did you start preaching on the moral issues of the day, the first priest to speak out on social events?
Well, in 1928, I foresaw a calamity that was befalling the entire world. Any person who had studied 17th and 18th century philosophy knew about it. I have happened to have had a good course in that. And I foresaw this calamity named Marxism. Americans, and I might say the entire civilized world today, call it as a misnomer communism. It's a misnomer. Marxism was a story. And this Marxism was a materialistic concept of life. It is absolutely contradictory to Christianity and Judaism, and in one sense, Hinduism and Buddhism, which is a spiritual concept of life. And I knew that they would succeed to a degree. Why did I know that? Because of the apathy of the Roman Catholic bishops in Europe. You were shocked in saying that?
No, except that it's difficult for me to understand why the Roman Catholic bishops in Europe could be such strange bedfellows to an atheist or atheistic totalitarianism. Where was their thinking?
They weren't bedfellows. You know, there are two ways to commit a sin, Howard. One is the sin of commission. The other is worse, I think, the sin of omission. In 1891, Leo XIII wrote his famous encyclical on Rerum Novarum, telling the bishop to get off their lazy feet and do something about this industrial revolution that was enabling man through steam, through electricity, to produce 50 times more than their mere muscles could produce. They had steam tractors out in the field. They had electric dynamos in the factories. The age of poverty was supposed to be at an end. And instead of facing the industrial revolution, which from the birth of Christ until that time had been the greatest factor in the whole world history, these bishops kept on going, paying no attention to Leo XIII and his encyclical Rerum Novarum. And naturally, Karl Marx, backed by Engels, backed by the working people, gained ground every day. And I foresaw that it was going to reach its greatest victories here in America, the home of industrialism, the home of the dynamo, the motor, the home of giants like Henry Ford, the Dodge brothers, the Fisher brothers, the men who knew how, Steinmetz. And still they were talking about the difference between the first half and the last half of the Hail Mary.
And indeed it did come to pass, and we're to continue the story. The exciting story of Father Charles E. Coughlin in just a moment on Chicago.
And six, the United States, disloyal to the councils of the fathers of this country, foolishly entangled the destinies of the American people with those of warring Europe, only with the result that our billions of dollars of great debts have been repudiated and our honor has been tarnished when we participated in making the world safe for hypocrisy.
I'm sure by now you can tell why this dynamic man, this dynamic preacher from the Roman Catholic Church had such a profound impression upon me, as like so many others. And we continue the story with Father Coughlin. Well, Father Coughlin, then, you saw these storm clouds gather, not only the storm of war, the Holocaust of war, but you saw this encroaching ugliness of communism, or Marxism, as you refer to it, engulfing the world. Certainly this has been a prophetic thing that you said then, because we have seen it come to pass. Do you see that the inroads that it has made has been an insurmountable hazard or object now for our getting back on the track of what we loved as the free enterprise system?
Well, it's a little deeper than that, Howard. Following World War I in 1918, there was the independence of Russia. The 1917-18 revolution had been concluded. The 1917-18 revolution in Russia saw the downfall of Tsar, of Tsarism, and of Northern European imperialism. The 1917 revolution saw the elevation of Karl Marx and the degradation of Jesus Christ. Americans didn't sense that. But those who lived in Poland, those who lived in Germany, Austria, Hungary, France, they knew it. It was as plain to them as the game between the Giants and some other teams. And Mr. Roosevelt at the time, Mr. Roosevelt, of course, had nothing to do with this very much. He was a young man, too. He was on his way up to become governorship of the governor of New York State. He was on his way up to take over the lagging Republican Party that wanted the statute quo to be kept for all eternity. And he had some good talks to me. Very good talks. It was he who coined the word from the old adage of Novus Ordo Seculorum. And he translated it. In fact, I helped him translate the word, the New Deal instead of the New Order.
The New Deal for the ages to come. And then when World War II came, he recognized Russia. He recognized Marxism. And he gave them $11 billion American dollars to set them up in business. Which is the historical fact. Father Coughlin, you were as much responsible as any other living American for the defeat of Herbert Hoover in the election of Franklin Delano Roosevelt. When, then, did you become disenchanted with President Roosevelt?
Well, I don't like to tell this story since you ask it hard, and these are days of telling facts instead of nursery rhymes.
It's time we should.
It's about time. I was very staunchly in support of Mr. Roosevelt. He had promised me this and promised me that, as he had done thousands and millions of other people. Over the air, from the rostrum, and in his writings. And I really believe the man meant what he said. But, for some reason which I do not care to go into now, he fell in love with certain phases of Marxism. Mr. Roosevelt did not like the industrial system we had here. He did not like the profits of General Motors, for example, which he told me. He did not like the profits of Henry Ford, of General Electric, of United States Steel, which is bait noir. And something had to be done about this. Better opportunities had to be given to the working people, said he. And I believed him, and he believed himself. But when he gave all this money to Russia, $11 billion, I grew a little bit cold. I said, you can't support this thing. You've never studied the philosophy of Mr. Hegel. Well, who was Hegel, he said to me one day. I said, didn't you ever hear of Immanuel Kant, of Fichte, of Schelling, of Hegel, of the man who coined a new God, of the man who wanted to dethrone Christ, of the man who wanted to set humanity up in his place? Oh, he says, that's all balder trash. I said, no, it isn't. It's a fact. And these men are gaining the upper hand all over Europe and all the schools of the world. So, eventually, we had trouble in Spain. Eventually, Franco came along. And eventually, the enemies of Franco, the Marxists, came along. And that bloody civil war eventuated. So, one day during this war that had spread over to Mexico in one sense because the rebels in Spain sent many of their goods over to Mexico to be buried there, chalices, Austin Storia, vestments, holy pictures and things. One day the Archbishop of Guadalajara in Mexico came to visit Michael Gallagher, the Bishop of Detroit, and threw a paper down on his desk and said, listen, Bishop, you can't let your man Coughlin support Mr. Roosevelt any longer. Well, why not? Says Bishop Gallagher. Because he is actually, through the Secretary of the Treasury, Henry Morgenthau, supporting the communist arms in Spain through Mexico. And there was a man in Mexico by the name of Toledano. And this Toledano was the head of the Communist Party, as they called him, or Marxist Party. And the Archbishop of Guadalajara showed a check, pictured, taken in a bank, the Bank of Mexico, with $10 million from the American Treasury, signed by Henry Morgenthau, made payable to Toledano. I saw the check myself. Well, the Archbishop of Guadalajara had his day. Bishop Gallagher forbade me having anything to more with processing this new deal. He says, this man is dangerous. He's gone over to the other side. Which was hard to believe. But then he reminded me, didn't he, after all, give $11 billion to Stalin and Lenin to set them up in business? And that was the end of the argument. Now, about 3 weeks later, Joseph Kennedy, the father of the late president, reached me by telephone from Poughkeepsie, New York. That's where Hyde Park is located. And Joseph Kennedy says, the boss is lonesome for you. Come on down. I used to see him about every 3 weeks.
The boss was Franklin Delano Roosevelt.
That's right. So I said, I can't go tomorrow. But the next day, I will be there. So those days, we didn't have airplanes, but I went on a train, got off at Albany about 3 o'clock in the morning. Boy selling newspapers on the street extras. And he said, Huey Long is dead. Now, I'm trying to give you the exact date of my visit. So I bought a paper, Huey Long is dead. Put it under my arm. Joe Kennedy and I went down to the Rolls Royce to Poughkeepsie. We went in the house that was unlocked. We got our own breakfast. And we waited for Mr. Roosevelt to come downstairs, and I helped him downstairs.
Father Coughlin, let's take a break here just for a moment, because this story becomes all the more fascinating and intriguing. I don't want to break it later. Let's break for a moment. We'll be right back with Father Coughlin on Chicago.
May I interpose a few thoughts relative to the possibility of averting the Second War, which appears to be the logical outcome of the Italian-Ethiopian War? One, everyone knows that the real issue is between England and Italy. Ethiopia is nothing more than a camouflaging marauder who on 90 recorded occasions invaded Italian African territory. Two, everyone knows that England fears the domination of Italy in the Mediterranean and consequently in Egypt and along the Suez Canal. Three, it is certain knowledge that Sir Samuel Hoare, the British Secretary of State, threatened to leave France to the tender mercies of Europe unless Premier Laval would sign the iniquitous sanctions against the women and children of Italy.
Father Coughlin, you are helping the President of the United States, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, crippled as he was, down the stairs for a conference with Joe Kennedy. Let me proceed.
And as I gave him my arm, he was a very strong man, Mr. Roosevelt, physically. He walked on his arms, as you know. And I gave him my arm. He had the staircase in his other hand. He said, what's that under your arm? And I opened it up and I said, your boyfriend is dead. The first news he had that Huey Long had died. Of course, I didn't know Huey Long except to see him once in all my life in a hospital where he was very ill.
It was rumored, of course, at that time that you and he had two philosophies that had coalesced. As opposition.
It was rumored that I was in league with many persons, including Hitler, whom I never saw, never heard of, except over the radio or something like that. But Mr. Roosevelt blanched. We came downstairs and we talked for about 6 hours that morning. And he says, why have you cooled off towards me? I said, because my bishop will not let me support you and your policies any longer. But why? I reached into my pocket and I pulled out this photostatic copy of a letter out of a check that his Secretary of the Treasury, Henry Morgenthau, had sent to Toledano in Mexico. I says, there's the reason. Says, I never heard of the thing before. I says, well, that's a pretty shallow answer to me. You never heard of it. I says, all your actions support it. And here we've been giving you our best support. So, that was the break. That was the real reason.
Then after that, of course, was there some degree of honeymoon again between you and the President of the United
Not
States?
One bit.
I was under the impression at that time that you had somehow fell again into his good graces, or he had...
Well, election days were coming on, Howard, you know, and at least if I would cease regaling him, that would be something in his favor, which I did, because there was no use any longer of pursuing that course. I knew then, back in that early days of 1930-31-32, that Marxism was coming here and is going to survive here after our democracy is through.
Father, bring us up to the present. You were a prophetic man 30, 40 years ago. Be a man of prophecy again.
It's very easy to do. This is not prophecy. This is simply putting facts of history and psychology, social psychology, together. You remember that Stalin was a fairly well-educated man. He was an ordained deacon in the Catholic Church. You know that, don't you?
Yes.
And you also know that Lenin was well-educated, especially in the philosophies of the 17th and 18th century. And you also know that one of the first items that any human being is interested in is his bread and butter. That's the first item that every man on the face of the earth is interested in. That held true in England, France, held true all over Europe, held true with the starving people, and all these looms and machines and dynamos were working, and they were getting the same pay then as they got before they were invented. And it was only a matter of time till the church and church men were being scoffed at, because the public never distinguishes between the church and church men. The church never erred, but the men, the church men, did seriously err. And as it so happened, the greatest hero in the schools those days was the old philosopher, Immanuel Kant, and his most potent pupil. His pupil generated many, many things. Sidney, Schelling, Schopenhauer, all those men, generated many things contrary to Christianity. And the main thing they generated in Das Kapital and in the writings that came forth as far back as 1848, there is no God. Now, that was the only stupidity that they ever uttered. I'm not saying stupidity for saying there are atheists. Men say that today, but there's no such a thing as an atheist. Do you recognize when Moses received the commandments? The first commandment was, I am the Lord thy God, thou shalt not have strange gods before me. God never said you must not become an atheist. He said you must not have strange gods. And every man who thinks he's an atheist is just a liar. He himself is his own God.
Father, wasn't it Engels as much as Marx who was responsible for Das Kapital?
Partly so. But going on with our pursuits here, I'm looking into the future now. We had nothing except the confusion in religion all over Europe, all over America. It culminated, we'll say, in Vatican II, when the rebels inside the Catholic Church didn't gain the upper hand inside the clôture of Vatican II, but did gain the upper hand by its releases to the public press and radio.
Father, let me take a pause. Just gather your breath for a moment. We'll be right back with Father Coughlin. Father, go ahead.
And so, out of Vatican II came all this confusion inside the church, caused by church men. You see, in our Catholic belief, the church is the mystical body of Jesus Christ. That's Catholicity. I don't know what all Protestants say, but some Protestants say the same thing.
Basically.
And I do know that the mystical body of Christ has been suffering from more Judas Iscariots, as it suffered at the beginning with it. From more doubting Thomases, as it suffered from the beginning. And I do know that the day communism has the upper hand in the whole world with its billions of population, we will say 5 or 6 billion population at the most, at least two-thirds is Marxist. Two-thirds is, and it's going to be another 100 million within another 5 years.
The dire prophecy, Father, and it's more than prophecy. I'm sure it's based on your knowledge and statistics of the world at large. As you know, here on our Chicago show, the audience participates with us. I'm sure there are a great many of your legion of followers who would like to participate with us tonight. Line one, you're on Chicago. Line one, go ahead, please.
Yes, sir. My name is Patricia Ellen, and I'd like to ask Father Coughlin, when Hitler awarded him the Iron Cross in the Second World War, if he accepted it.
My real lady, I never met Mr. Hitler. I wouldn't know him if I saw him. I was never in Germany except years before 1918, it was. And 2 years ago, going up the Rhine. So that's certainly a hoax and a...
Well, it was more of the intrigue that was brought about to damage, apparently, and impugn your reputation.
Yes, there were certain order groups who wanted World War II.
Same thing to Charles Lindbergh, of course.
Yes. Sure.
All right, line three, you're on Chicago. Line three?
Hello.
Yes.
Yes, I'd like to ask the Father, if he feels that the Catholics, or any of them, are doing enough to teach not to hate the Jews and we're being called Christ killers all our lives. They're not teaching enough and going into it enough, I feel. And we people never went out and caused fires and trouble. We made a life wherever we went, no matter what. We never harmed anyone. The hatred was not there. I went out to try and prove to people. My friends are all Gentile. They didn't know I was Jewish until at the last minute, and they'd say to me, "Oh, you're different." And I'd say, "How am I different?" "Well, I don't know." And they were taught this in the church. They told me themselves to hate the Jewish people for being a Christ killer.
Darling, you're altogether in error on that point. You know who killed Christ? You killed him. I killed him. Sinners kill Christ, not Jews. And every man and woman on the face of the earth today is a sinner. And he came down here to give his life to save sinners. He came down here to give his life that we might rise from the dead. And anyone who says that Catholic Church teaches hatred of the Jews is maligning God as well as the Catholic Church. You can't be a Christian unless you have charity. And charity means this, that I love you not because you are who you are, but I love you despite who you are sometimes, because you are made to the image and likeness of God. Every Congolese, every person all over the face of the earth, to be black or white or Jew or Gentile or sinner or saint, is made to the image and likeness of God, and you must love him as you love the American flag that represents our nation.
I think you've answered the lady, and thank you, Father. Line two, you're on Chicago.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
My name is Rich Crow, and I'd like to ask Father Coughlin a question about the book that came out in 1936 that he wrote called Money, Questions and Answers. And in that book, he talked about honest and dishonest money systems and singled out the Federal Reserve system as being unconstitutional. And I'd like to have his opinion on, just today, what part the Federal Reserve system plays in our economic situation.
Well, my dear gentleman and friend, I would like to say this. As you are well aware, Mr. Nixon has been indulging in deficit spending, as has Mr. Johnson
and every president.
And Mr. Kennedy, particularly.
Yes,
Those are the three greatest sinners we've had in the fight in the White House. I think Mr. Nixon beats all of them, though. And do you know where that deficit spending comes from? The Federal Reserve Bank is owned by all the banks of the nation. It is not a government entity. It's a privately owned institution. The Federal Reserve Bank is empowered by the government to create money. And it lends this created money to the federal government, on which there's a charge of as high as 3%. Never in the history of the whole world have the bankers made so much money out of nothing, so much profit out of nothing, as during this deficit spending spree we Americans have been on. And a banker friend of mine just the day before yesterday told me that very likely the bankers of this country and other countries made $89 billion this last 3 years on the interest alone from the deficit spending the United States has been engaged in. Does that answer your question?
Yes, it does.
Thank you very much, sir, for your call. Thank you for a positively dynamic answer, Father. We'll be back in just a moment on Chicago.
Oh, the Chrysler Institution! $41 was the price for their stock but 1 year ago. Today it is $87. The owners of industry have increased their wealth almost three times. 78.25 cents an hour for labor a year ago. The same today. Only the cost of living has decreased their wages by 40%. If capitalism is smart, is wise, it will begin to pay part of their profits to institute an honest living annual wage for the American public.
I'm for you're on Chicago with Father Coughlin.
Yes, Howard. A wonderful show tonight.
Thank you.
Father Coughlin?
Yes, sir.
I remember you back in the, I was 12 years old back at the bombing of Pearl Harbor. And my
That's 30 years ago. Now you're getting to be a young man.
Well, but there were two questions. I can't remember too much about how you fell away from Roosevelt. I listened to part of it on the phone. You know, you're talking other lines. But I was wondering, you're talking about the U.S. government and our formation of policy towards the communists. I was just wondering, I can't understand how the United States can condemn India for trying to save lives in East Bengal. How we can, you know, cut off supplies to India and West, I can understand West Pakistan, but not India, really.
Well, you want to comment on
that? Well, I'll comment a little bit on this. Your question goes a little bit deeper if you wish to probe that deep. Your question goes into our support of Marxism. Now, it's a funny thing. We've been fighting no-win wars. Policied no-win wars in Korea. No-win war in Vietnam. Not a ship of ours went into Hanoi Bay to blow up all those vessels bringing cargoes of rifles, guns, ammunition. Not a bomb of ours dropped on Hanoi. And plenty of bombs dropped on Saigon. That's the only truth I'll give her. That's the same truth that my friend General MacArthur told me about in Korea. In Korea, we weren't allowed to go beyond a certain mark divisional line. General MacArthur told me personally that he could have defeated the Koreans in any given 10 hours had he been permitted to do by Mr. Truman. And Mr. Truman, who knew as much history as a little child in eighth grade, that's about all he knew, forbade MacArthur to go in there. And as a result, the no-win war became a habit. It's a habit all over the world. Nobody wants to win a war. Even some of the bishops of the United States don't want to win the war either. But let me get that jive in. But here's how deep this question goes. I'm reading now an excerpt from the paper, and I'll tell you about the paper in a minute. A high-ranking Commerce Department official has admitted today that the sale of $1 billion worth of United States equipment for a Soviet truck factory was approved despite a finding by government experts that it will increase Russia's military potential.
That's the White Factory there.
Yes. This startling admission was made by Rauer Meyer, M-E-Y-E-R, director of the Commerce Department's Office of Export Control, in a letter he wrote to Anthony Sutton, the research fellow at the Hoover Institution of War, Revolution and Peace, and the top expert in the United States on how Western technology has helped Soviet economic development. And we're fighting Russia, let's admit it, in Hanoi Bay. We're fighting Russia in North Vietnam.
Even in Cuba.
We're fighting Russia 90 miles away, where this John Kennedy assertion that the bombs were removed is not true, because I have it on direct information from a person still living in Cuba that the bombs are there in Oriente Province and that dummies were put on the ship. That's a fact. The the machinery to Russia. And at war with them, and probably again at war with them in the next 4 years.
Thank you, sir, for your question. Line 5, you're on Chicago.
Hello?
Yes.
Father?
Yes, dear.
Father, first I have a comment to make and then a question for you. My grandfather, who would be 95 if he was alive, was one of your most ardent admirers. And I know he would have been so proud to have had the opportunity to say hello to you. I know you were quite a controversial figure because of your stand on the potential of communism in the world. And personally, I believe you were right. And I respected your right of free speech then, and I also respect that right for every man today. But as a Catholic, I have lost respect for the priests and clergy today who advocate and participate in violence.
Now,
and I would like your comment on this.
Be brief now. What is your question? Is there a question or just a statement, madam?
Well, let me carry on from there, dear. I think I know what's back in your mind. You know, Mr. Nixon was elected after he had brought in courts Mr. Hiss. And Hiss, of course, was the arch criminal of this country for many years. He had taken our nuclear secrets and given them to Russia. Now, Mr. Nixon tolerates the thing that I just read. Mr. Nixon goes further. He's now trying to clean out this terrible mess that Mr. Kennedy made and that Mr. Johnson made by escalating this war, this no-win war. And he's going over to Hanoi, probably, but certainly to Peking, to shake hands with Mao, to shake hands later on in Russia with their Secretary of State and their president, after all he has said and done with communism. You know, when he gets off that plane over in Peking, there are going to be 53 million Christian Chinese standing at his side, dead corpses. We Americans, Catholics and Protestants, sent estimated $175 million even in the last 3 years before Nixon went into office to help Christianity there. But that's beside the point.
Father, let me take a break here just for a moment. We'll come right back to your story on Chicago. Father, we certainly can't despair. This is a great country. It will always remain a great country. Those of us who have the courage to speak out in its defense and its behalf must be heard. But certainly there must be some solution to this.
There's no solution by compromising with communism, you call it here, or with Marxism, which is definitely antithetical to everything we Americans stand for. Our forefathers who came here dedicated this country to God. Our forefathers who came here even had imprinted on our coinage and they won their independence, in God we trust. Our forefathers here had everything of freedom of worship in this country. And yet we allow them in the Supreme Court to mangle the words God and religion.
But Father, you certainly don't advocate as a Christian man that we war against the communist nations.
No, no.
Do you advocate then that our posture should be one of isolation?
No, no. There's only one way of defeating Marxism. That's by Christianity using the weapons of St. Paul. We must war with them. War with our faith. War with our hope. War with our love. War with our... Well, here we are trying to be the policemen of the world, aren't we? My God, all the soldiers of the United States couldn't keep crime out of Detroit. They couldn't keep crime out of Washington.
But that spiritual strength and that spiritual belief in itself will not defeat the communists.
We can't
have this intercourse and trade with them while we are trying to be spiritually right, can we, Father? Isn't this?
No, no. Pope Pius XI gave the guardian line of activity in this thing. He said, no one is allowed to collaborate with communism in any manner whatsoever.
Well, that would be business
because it is intrinsically wrong, just as wrong as adultery or as murder. That's the only way we can think. You can't go ahead and shake hands, and Mr. Nixon can't get off that plane with 50,000 Americans dead in South Vietnam, who'll be his bodyguard, the ghost, as he shakes hands.
But he is going to shake hands, Father.
He is, to our disgrace.
We are going to have that rapport, that rapprochement with China, and apparently again now with the heads of state in Russia. From this will come a lesser life for Americans, do you believe, for the United States?
I agree with you that we're going to do it. And I also agree with you because we're not fighting with the weapons of Christianity and with love and with hatred, and because we believe such vulgar trash that Catholics hate Jews, and because we believe that we support Nazism. I believe that we're going to lose, and that communism, in the form of another Marxist Hegelian theory, will take over in this country, and they're already calling it in some of the schools financial Marxism. You're going to lose liberties here. Already, Mr. Nixon is taking over the children of this nation. There's no more state laws involved. It's the United States of America that gives money for the schools. The United States of America that's fostering integration. And the United States of America, more than anything else, adopting the French theory of democracy, which means minority rights take precedence over majority rights. No rights of God, no rights of the majority ever mentioned.
Brother Coughlin, aren't we almost parallel to the Weimar Republic before the rise of Hitler? And isn't that likely to be the next step here in the United States if we continue to allow this so-called submissive attitude of our United States government? Won't there be a strong man to take over?
We have to get rid of this form of democracy you have. Now, don't say I'm against democracy. There are many kinds of democracy, the same as there are many kinds of animals, all the way from a toad to an elephant. And the democracy we have, this French democracy that I'm telling you about of 1789, is the one we have in America. It was all the rights of man. No rights of God, no rights of the majority. The rights of the poor man. The rights of the minority man. You read your Robespierre, Rousseau, Condorcet, Condillac, Voltaire. Read all
back in just a moment with Father Coughlin. Ladies and gentlemen, I've been proud to present as my guest tonight the fighting priest, Father Charles E. Coughlin. Thank you very much, Father Coughlin.
Thank you indeed, Howard.